It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. Very excited. A huge day for Pirate Nation as we have National Signing Day, a big basketball game tonight, home against Wichita State, and lots of great stuff to talk about in the roundtable as well. With me, the usual suspects, we have Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, man?
What's on, dude?
Always have fun to talk to you, and same thing for Bubba. What's up, man?
Good evening, guys.
Here, he's famous now. It's just Bubba, not Bubba Rosenbaum, so... Everybody loves him. He's been on the podcast for 6 months, and he's already just Bubba. I'm very excited about National Signing Day. I know that we were talking before the podcast. It's kind of passe. The National Signing Day, it's more moved up to back in the, I think it was December 19th. It was the one, the quote-unquote early signing day. But it feels like that's kind of like signing day, right, Kyle?
Yeah, this... We pretty much signed our full class. We have a few more players to sign. I'd be interested to see who does sign tomorrow. But what do we have? How many scholarships do we have left to give?
Was it three? I want to say it was three.
Yeah, so it's not much to it. Tomorrow there to this National Signing Day party. So that's cool. They're making a big deal out of it. You know, the early signing period is kind of just – screwed this date all up, to be honest.
Yeah. You know, normally I'm not it's not a big deal, and I'm obviously for tweaking things and improving things, but this is one thing that I felt like the National Signing Day, it's always right after the Super Bowl as far as football, so it gives you another thing about, you know, college football to be excited about. And then you have the spring game, and then, you know, it's cute. This, it's part of the calendar year, and like you said, the December – early signing period is kind of taking away the, it's kind of lackluster now because it's kind of like a foregone conclusion of you pretty much know the your class already, and there might be one or two or three here, but unless you're a really big, when you say guys, unless you're like a five-star recruit, you have to be careful because if you hold out too long, now with a new strategy, you could find yourself without a scholarship, or you're definitely not going to be going to the school that you really want to go to.
Yeah, I think unless you are an elite recruit, you're pretty much going to sign in December. There are a few guys out there, you know, the running back we were offering, it ended up playing his cards right, and he ended up getting an offer from Clemson. Yeah. So there are examples like that, but by and large, yeah, if you're not a five-star, you probably better go ahead and sign up in December.
I know, Bubba, with National Signing Day, it's exciting. One respect this year because we're have a new coaching staff, a new AD, new administration when it comes to it. It's like a new everything. And I just got to give props again to John Gilbert. Another great decision on his part. He's emceeing the event tomorrow night, folks. It's at 5 o'clock. The club-level side of the stadium, the side that Bubba and Kyle sit on, that would be the north side. And it's going to be tomorrow. The doors open at 4:30. Again, they're looking for a head count, so go to ecpirates.com. There's a place where you can sign up and register for that. So make sure you do that. It's going to be a lot of fun. They're going to have, let's see, so Gilbert's going to be the AC. You have Mike Houston's going to be there talking about the class. And then you have the offensive coordinator, Donnie Kirkpatrick. The defensive side of the ball, you have Bob Trott. There's going to be other great people there. It's a chance for, I think, Pirate Nation to celebrate. And, Kyle, the last few years, it's an understatement to say that we haven't had a lot to celebrate, but you can tell with the program, as far as administration is concerned, that's moving forward in the right direction. You look at the basketball program, we're going to be talking about the game tonight, Wichita State, that's heading the right direction. Baseball, we're very excited with that coming up. Radford, just a... gosh, what is it, 10 days or less away from baseball season starting. So a lot of great things happening in Pirate Nation right now. And it was just, I remember in 2017, a year before we started the podcast, God almighty, it seemed like everything that could go wrong went wrong. Even the baseball team didn't make a regional, which was unheard of for us.
Yeah, no, it's things are headed in the right direction for sure. It's a lot of things to be excited about versus in recent history. So, baseball coming up, and then obviously we're excited about football season with Mike Houston in year one, and baseball, like you said, less than 10 days. We start what could be a historic campaign in East Carolina baseball history. The potential's there. So it's good to have positive things to look forward to.
And by the way, Bubba, I appreciate you sharing that with a lot of message boards in different places. If you haven't had a chance, folks, you need to make sure to listen to our previous podcast. It's our college baseball preview. ESPN college baseball analyst Mike Rooney. What a tremendous – you see him on TV, but he was really good to us. And we already have a lot of people listening to that. So if you haven't listened to that, make sure you go back and listen to that, getting you ready for college baseball. But we're talking about football, and I think there's going to be a lot of people in Pirate Nation that are going to be there. I think the fact that this – it's been nice, this so far so good with this administration. You feel like the old days with Terry Holland and before, where – it was an open-door policy where you felt like you – I was thinking about that this morning. I knew we were going to record tonight. It's like an ownership. Like you feel like you're part of the – I hate to say, it's such a cliche, but you feel like you're part of the team again. It felt like when you were the previous administration, they didn't want anything to do with the history of this program. They didn't want the players. I felt like they wanted to keep the fans in every possible way between not being – transparent, not being, the trust was there, lost. But the honesty part was not there. There was a lot of factors there. They just felt like they had their hands out pushing the fans in Pirate Nation away. And it feels like with this administration has been totally the opposite. I know our good friend John Bream has right the ship, and it feels like the ship is definitely turning around, and hopefully we can say, looking back after our end of the year show this year coming up in December and early January, we can say, boy, 2018 was a good start, and then 2019 is really when the ship turned around.
Yeah, I mean, time's going to tell, but things are headed in the right direction. Gilbert's doing a good job so far. So far, so good. Transparency's there. I don't think he's the he's not the rah-rah guy that Holland was, but he's got the same transparency so far that Holland did, and that's good. Really like the letters. He from the helm. Holland called him from the desk. He's calling him from the helm. I really like that. They're informative. So it's good to have that again, and it's good to just not have the athletic director make you nauseous.
It's like – I noticed that with you, Kyle, that have you had not to – you don't have to take your blood pressure medicine anymore, right, now that the conference is gone?
No, I'm able to cut back on the dosage.
Okay, all right. Yeah. I'm just wondering because you there was times when before obviously I know you, but the Kyle from LaGrange and people would say, do you think, oh, my God, this game is so bad right now? I bet Kyle from LaGrange, he could have a heart attack on the fifth quarter.
Well,
and so I'm just wondering. Yeah. I wonder this
year. That could happen anyway because of my excess weight. But Staten's still here, so I still have to take at least half the dosage of blood pressure medicine.
All right, so I mean, you can. And there was and that thing with the. We're going to get to another thing. Our friends at Southern Miss. We'll get that in just a second. Has there been any updates? You've been following the story closer. Then Bubba and I, has there been any update on the situation with, I know the 40 under 40, they found they're having the event again, but is there anything else that's come out that you can talk about, Kyle?
Well, there was a letter to the Daily Reflector and an article where the Alumni Association committee that selected basically members of the alumni. So I'd have to go read the article again,
okay.
But basically them standing up for themselves and for the committee. Saying that they didn't like being called out, their integrity in the selection process of the 40 under 40 being questioned by Cecil State and Kieran Shanahan. So, again, it's ECU versus ECU. And it's funny that they used the words that there was a divisive individual chose for the 40 under 40, when, again, it's Staten and Shanahan they're the ones that are divisive as they continue to divide Pirate Nation with their actions. And now you, like I said, with the article in the Daily Reflector, it's just more of the same crap.
You know, Kyle, what's funny is that people, I wanted to say something. I'm glad you said that about the divisive part. It's funny to me, and when it comes to Dr. John Bream, the people that comment on, I said this before when we had the case of the missing 40 under 40, people that comment about John Bream have never talked to John Bream. They don't even know John Bream.
The people that comment about John Bream are a handful of people that are in bed with Staten and Harriet. And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
And it, what's funny about the whole situation is, okay, so people say about the banners, right? He shouldn't have flown the banner or whatever. And the funny thing is people say, well, what you should do the correct way is to write letters. Well, guess what?
Well, look,
John Bream,
I helped pay. Look, let's be honest. See, I helped me and a bunch of other people that first banner. Helped John Bream pay for it. So it wasn't just John that flew that banner. It was his idea, his ingenuity, his doing. But there were people who contributed to that banner. So it wasn't just all Bream. A whole bunch of people wanted that banner flown.
And if it had been another thing too, speaking of divisive, if John was the lunatic fringe, he's not. So let me clarify that.
Fringe is the people that support the state.
It's crazy because he actually wants what's best for the university. Look what John, this is the thing. I can understand if John were a bad person, but John's not. And he actually has, everything he's done has been, maybe some people are embarrassed because they've been outed maybe. But what are you supposed to do?
Well, bottom line, it's not Bream. It's not Bream versus the administration. And I think that's what the administration wants it to look
they
like.
They want it, yeah.
But it's not. It's a whole bunch of people that want those ass clowns out of here. And at this point, they're holding – that's what's holding Gilbert back from being able to really – that's what's holding the athletic department back. If season ticket sales now, I do think the home schedule may affect it. But I think – there's still some fans that are turned off by Staten and Shanahan.
Yep.
And until they're out of here, they're not going to come back. So
yeah, I feel like with us, we need to. I know people said this is true. We need a clean slate. And you know, there are a lot of people that have retired that have left the program when it comes to athletics. Whether we like it or not, it's happened. And the one good thing about it, it's been refreshing as far as getting new blood. I really like Ryan Robinson, for example. Loved hearing his interviews on the media with, like, for Pirate Radio with, I know, Brian Bailey, PRL. He's going to be at the event today and later this afternoon. So we'll see about that. I really think you're right, Kyle. I'll tell you this, too. And I'll make this statement too, and some people may not believe me. There are a lot of people that are not going to give academically to the university or any kind of campaign when it comes to fundraising until Cecil is gone. And I know that for a fact. I know people are that way.
Definitely the case.
So, right now, if you think that things are going to get better, I think athletics will be better. I really do with the things we're going. Things are headed in the right direction, but it's going to really shoot off like a rocket when we have a change at the Board of Trustees, when we have a change at the top. That's going to be a big deal. So, again, folks, don't forget this afternoon, I want to remind you about the big event. Actually, the doors open at 4:30. 5 o'clock will be the start in the club level section of Dowdy Ficklin Stadium. Make sure you go there, support them. It's going to be light hors d'oeuvres. They have a cash bar. So bring your wallet, bring your cash, bring your debit cards, whatever. And don't forget to join the Pirate Club. Maybe you can go out there, and I know the Pirate Club folks are going to be out there, so I'm sure they wouldn't mind taking your application again. I know that we've got a lot of great guests tonight, or at least I know Bubba. I know that we have a great guest tonight as well, right?
Yeah, actually, before we get to that guest, though, something I was going to mention, of course, our good friend Steven Igo at Hoist the Colors does a tremendous job covering recruiting year-round. And I was looking at an article he put out there earlier today, a couple of the top targets that we have vying for those final three scholarships, a couple of defensive linemen from the state of Virginia. They're ranked in the top 40 prospects in that state. And a couple of guys, I think that had already, at least one, I think both had been recruited by Coach Houston and staff at JMU. And I know there's one, Emmanuel Hickman, who has an offer from UCF and some quality offers. And then you also have Rick D'Abreu. So those are two to keep an eye on tomorrow.
And we definitely will. And I tell you what, Igo, by the way, he told me he listens to us while he's working out. So Igo, definitely pump some more iron. I know he's going to be pumped up and excited for National Signing Day. We're also going to be working on, folks, by the way, want to plug a couple things we got coming up. We told you about the college baseball preview. That's our previous episode, so check that out. We also have the American Alliance football coming up this weekend. We'll have that great league is starting. Well, that's to be determined, I guess, but I think it'll be a great league for football. Actually starting this weekend. That's coming out. Plus, we have all the stuff with the National Signing Day, and we'll try to get Igo and some other folks to do that.
Yes, speaking of the AAF, Igo had a good article just saying ECU's connections, and we'll be talking to Bryce Williams and then and Greg Herring, who's in charge of marketing with the Memphis Express.
Big basketball game tonight, and of course, I want to bring in now Bubba Rosenbaum. Bubba, man, I tell you, big game, and we're excited to have Wichita State come into town, 7 o'clock. Tonight at Williams Arena, Midgies Coliseum. Obviously, I'll be there, and a lot of Pirate faithful. And hopefully, I can get a W for tonight, man.
Yeah, these are two programs that are really struggling right now, and that's surprising to say that about Greg Marshall's Shockers, but that's the case nonetheless. You take a look at ECU. We're 9-12, 2-7, coming off a thrashing up at UConn on Sunday afternoon, and it's a game we just simply had no answers for their post guys. And then you take a look at the Shockers. They're actually coming in on a two-game win streak. I believe they've defeated SMU and Tulsa. Both of those games were played in Wichita, but the Shockers are actually 10-11, 3-6. So two programs that are trying to have a strong finish to the year to get up into the middle of the league standings. But you just taking a look at Greg Marshall, I mean, and what he's done with that Wichita State program, it's hard to believe. You and I were talking off the air the other day how that was just mind-boggling that it's his 12th season already guiding the Shocker program. But he went 11-20 and 17-17 in his first 2 years. But then these last 9 years prior to his struggles this year, they won 25-plus ball games, and, of course, and they had that 12-13 season where they went to the Final Four and nearly won it all.
That's amazing. He's done a great job. And I want to say, Bub, I have absolute amount of respect for Greg Marshall and love the Wichita program. But I really believe that the Pirates have got a good shot tonight. I know that they're on a two-game winning streak. We have the tough game at UConn, but I think there's going to be a lot of people, Dowdy Ficklin, initially at Dowdy Ficklin is what I'm trying to say, for the National Signing Day. And I think there's going to be a lot of folks that say, hey, let's check out the basketball game. And then you have the brand name of Wichita State. They've been good, like you said, over the last few years. And so I think that it's going to be of course, you remember last year, Wichita was so good. And everybody wanted that 9 o'clock game tip off last year. I'll never forget. But what a difference a season makes, and it is what it is, whatever, you know, they have. And we need to pack the house tonight, Williams Arena. Hopefully people will go there and definitely be screaming. I know I'm going to be cheering really loud for the Pirates because I think they've got a really good shot. I think they win the game tonight. But, you know, again, it all depends on – I think it really depends on – more than talent tonight. I think it's going to come down to who wants it more. I really do. I think that we've got to get – I want to get your thoughts on this, Bubba, but the three-point shooting has not been good for the Pirates, and that's something that we've struggled at recently, and hopefully we can turn that around, right?
Yeah, it's something that it's been the hand that this program's been dealt, what this coaching staff's been dealt, rather, I should say. But yeah, KJ Davis had a decent game the other day, but Sean Williams has really struggled, and that's the one you thought you could really depend on. But I'm sure it's certainly not helped his case, the fact that he's been the primary one that has had the other teams gunning for him, knowing that he had such a tremendous freshman year last year. But looking at the numbers, Wichita State struggles to shoot the three as well. They're only like 30 or 31% from three, yeah. And they're 0-6 on the road. So, like you say, it's going to be interesting to see how this one unfolds tonight. I think the last I saw that maybe Wichita State was a slight favorite, don't hold me to that. I want to say that they were like a 2 to 4 point favorite coming into this game, which is about where I would have had it.
And hopefully they can – yeah, I think that obviously with maybe you could give the edge a little bit to Wichita with the talent. But there again, I think the Pirates are going to be tremendous. It comes down to really, like I said, who wants it, because I think that the teams at where they are in the season and the conference with American, it's going to be a real big fight, and we'll see how that plays out. But another thing I know you want to talk about is the –
actually, before we move on to other topics, is a guy that we really need to keep an eye on tonight that we're going to have an answer for. And so if you're going out to the game, if you're watching on ESPN News at 7 o'clock, Marcus McDuffie, 6'8", about 215, 220. He's an extremely versatile player for the Shockers. He's shooting right at 40%. He's their top three-point shooter with more than 50 makes from deep. And then he also is, I think, second in rebounding, right at 5 rebounds per game, and he's averaging nearly 19 points a game. So Marcus McDuffie is the guy to keep an eye on. He's a senior, so he's the one that leads the Shockers.
All right, we'll keep an eye on him, and maybe we can shut him down with some great defense. We'll see how that plays out. Bubba, we also like to give love to all the sports in East Carolina, not just football, basketball, and baseball. And I know that there's a lot of great season coming up. By the way, women's lacrosse team actually kicks off this weekend, I believe on Friday. So make sure you go out there and support them. But a lot of other teams for the spring sports have already started, right?
Right. In addition to women's lacrosse kicking off this weekend, you have first pitch for softball. We talked to Courtney Oliver on the program here within the last couple weeks. And so her club will be getting their season started, down in Spartanburg, South Carolina. USC Upstate is having a tournament, and the Pirates, weather permitting, and I think the weather is supposed to be nice, but we'll play 5 games down there. I think it's two on Friday, and then one on Saturday, and two on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. But nonetheless, 5 games in that event. And then you also had women's golf and men's golf who had their first spring tournaments over the weekend. I believe those were Sunday starts, and then they wrapped up yesterday. 3-day events. The women were down in Orlando. They were playing in the UCF Challenge at the Eagle Creek Golf Club. They finished 10th out of 16. A very excellent field in down in Orlando. It was 10 top 50 teams. And the tournament was led by number 6 Vanderbilt. They won the event 23 under.
And, wow!
And Lady Pirates, we finished 3 under and in 10th out of 16, like I mentioned. And our best day was day 2. And in days 1 and 3, we finished 3 over par. But in day 2, we shot 9 under. So we're just looking for a little more consistency. And then individually, we were led by Dortea Forbridge. She was 2 under and finished tied for 20th. As far as the men, they were down in Florida as well at TPC Sawgrass, Dyes Valley. They're competing in the CBEST Invitational, and they finished 9th out of 14 teams. They were led individually by A.J. Beechler. I hope I'm pronouncing that last name correctly. And he was tied for 7th at 1 under, just 3 shots off the individual championship, which was 4 under. as far as the teams, the Pirates were, like I said, 9th of 14, 28 over par, but there were no teams of the 14 that finished under par. The tournament was won by Florida State, and they finished even par.
Wow. No, I was just it's amazing. One of the great things about doing the podcast is we've been able to learn even more about all the different sports. We have 19 sports at East Carolina, and very proud of that. And definitely we're looking to have all the coaches on, so don't worry, we'll have as many on as we can, but certainly we should have everyone between now and before the season's out, or the, I guess, spring season, if you will. In fact, I know baseball's coming up.
Yeah.
Next week, the big baseball banquet is Saturday night. I don't think they have any more tickets, but I think that you had to have all your stuff in by Monday. But looking forward to that with Cliff. I know that he's been working hard and celebrated a birthday recently, and I know that he's got the team. They're going to be jacked up, ready to go next weekend.
Yeah, that three-game series to start the year with Radford at Clark LeClaire. So really looking forward to that. Hope to make it down from the Charlotte area for at least one of those three games. But something else I wanted to add as far as men's and women's tennis, and then also track. Men's tennis off to a 5-0 start prior to Sunday's loss. 4-3 loss at the ECU Indoor Tennis Center to UNC Asheville. UNC Asheville is 4-0. And then the women are 0-2. And they had a couple of tough road matches at NC State and at North Carolina, and they will be, after about a two-week break, resuming action on Friday when they play down in New Orleans against Tulane. And then as far as track is concerned, it was a solid weekend. It was a kind of a different weekend. It was a split weekend. You had part of the team at the Doc Hale Elite Meet at Virginia Tech, and then you had some of the team in Winston-Salem at the Camel City Invitational, but you had some records set. You had senior Akeem Horton, who won the long jump individual title at 7.38 meters. He also finished second in the 200-meter dash with a time of 21.67 seconds. You had Mackenzie Whitaker. She posted the fourth-best women's indoor long jump mark in program history with a jump of 5.98 meters. And then at the Camel City Invitational, you had freshman Anna Bristle cross the finish line in the 3,000-meter run with a time of 9 minutes, 48.89 seconds, which is the third fastest women's indoor 3,000-meter in school history. So those are some things to note as far as ECU indoor track.
I tell you what, that's fast as lightning. Wow. Great to them. And I know that we have Coach Kraft on, and he's one of the coaches, and we mentioned all the coaches we're going to have on, something we'll do here on the Sports Objective to honor our great university, East Carolina. And, of course, we always have other sports, and I know, Bub, I want to mention the folks that we have, the preview people are just going crazy over, and that is the college baseball preview we did with Mike Rooney. Our previous episode is just blowing out of the water. It's going crazy. Want to remind folks, we also have, of course, this episode, we have the National Signing Day, a busy week for us, and we also have the Alliance of American Football is, we'll have in the next few days as well. We have a special there that'll be big, right?
Yeah, first let me talk about that preview that you referenced as far as college baseball. That was an excellent 45 or so minute interview with Mike Rooney.
Yeah.
He's someone who's not only played college baseball at a high level at Notre Dame, but coached it for a decade at Arizona State, which is one of your perennial regional programs, a program that produced the likes of Barry Bonds, Dustin Pedroia, et cetera. So he's someone that has a tremendous background in college baseball and now has been doing the analyst work for about a decade, I guess, or maybe even longer. And so really enjoyed catching up with him. We talked about, of course, the Pirates, but then also the AAC, and then some regional teams, and then pretty much covered the entire landscape across the country. So if you're a college baseball fan, really encourage you to go back and listen to that interview.
It was great, and give us a chance to do the college baseball preview. We have, by the way, folks, next week we also have, we've been working really hard behind the scenes, we have a North Carolina, the state of North Carolina baseball preview. We'll be doing that, And of course, as we get close to the season starting, we'll get you ready next week. We have an East Carolina preview, right, Bubba?
Right, and that's what a few weeks back we were able to talk to head coach Cliff Godwin. So for those of you who may have missed that interview, the preview that we'll be releasing next week, we'll certainly include that in there. So not only will you hear from ECU head coach Cliff Godwin, but you'll hear from four coaches around the state: Duke's Chris Pollard, North Carolina's Mike Fox, UNC Wilmington's Mark Scaff, and then Kermit Smith from App State. So tremendous interviews with all five of those guys. And then, I'm sorry, what was the other one you asked me about, Dave?
We have the ECU preview we'll have as well, for ECU baseball preview.
Absolutely. No one knows more about ECU baseball probably than Dr. Gary Overton. He is, of course, an assistant and then also was the head coach for more than a decade. So we'll catch up with Coach O early next week and see what Coach O's take is on not only ECU, but then we'll get his take on other college baseball items as well.
And I know we have a play-by-play voice of the ECU Pirates for baseball, and that's Corey Glory. He's coming on with us. And we'll have Steven Igo, so many other players, so many people that have agreed to come on. So we're working on that behind the scenes right now, but wanted to take the time to mention that.
Yeah, definitely. One of those former players that we'll be hearing from is Corey Scott, who was a tremendous relief pitcher back in the Keith Clare era. Corey, he was someone who led the nation in saves in, I believe it was the 2000 season. So he played with Cliff Godwin, and he was actually the keynote speaker at last year's baseball banquet inside Williams Arena Minji's Coliseum, and just did an excellent job. We look forward to having Corey on.
That's going to be great. So a lot of great things coming up, and we'll go to our guests right now.
Earlier, you referenced the guests that we have, and now we're very excited to be joined by ECU basketball letter winner, and one of the top rebounders in ECU basketball history, Errol Bing from the Bill Herrien era.
Another great guest. Pirates got a big game tonight, a big game against Wichita State home. We want everybody to go out to, I was going to say Dowdy Ficklin, but there's a big celebration with National Signing Day. We've got football and basketball tonight. Of course, oh, wow. It's Williams Arena and Minji's Coliseum. A guy that definitely knows a lot about that, Bubba, is Errol Bing, right?
There's no doubt about it, Dave. When you take a look at Errol Bing, he had such an unbelievable career. I think he led us in offensive rebounds for a career. Also was second all-time, in total rebounds. And then he also had a single-game record where he pulled down 24 boards against USF, and he's tied for fifth all-time with 24 career double-doubles.
Errol, welcome into the podcast.
Guys, thanks for having me.
No doubt about it. We wanted to have you on, and very excited about Pirate basketball. It's a few years previous to this year was, to be quite honest, I don't know the way to say it, there was not a lot of excitement. And having Coach Dooley back with the program, I just wanted to, out of the gate, I want to get your thoughts on Coach Dooley. Have you had a chance to see some games this year? What are your thoughts?
So far, I've caught a couple, mostly highlights and things of that nature, and I like what right. I see. Guys look like they're playing really hard. Looks like he's got a great young core of guys. I personally have never met Coach Dooley, but I've heard great things about him. If you remember, Coach Herrien replaced him, would have been my freshman year.
Right.
And so, like, the guys that were there before him, Coach Herrien, Travis Holcomb-Fay, Brandon Hawkins, Larry Morrissey, all had nice things to say about Coach Dooley. So, you know, hopefully one day I can get down there and actually meet him and the staff and check out a game. It's been a while since I've been in Minji, so it's time for me to get back down there.
Well, let's talk about that career. Of course, I was a huge fan of – I really liked Coach Herrien, and I really liked him and his intensity. It seemed like he sweat more than any coach I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I can vouch for that.
Was he that way in practice? Did he just sweat all the time?
He's just an intense guy, man.
Right.
He loves basketball and he loves coaching, and it literally came out of his pores. He would want to put his intensity into each player, and I think that's what most coaches want. But you can see Coach Herrien's passion
through his shirt, literally.
And as far as the personality, I've said that about Coach Dooley. I think the same thing with Coach Arian. He really got a lot out of you guys, right? I mean, he was so intense that
he pushed us. Absolutely. Yeah. He absolutely pushed us. And, you know, I think as a younger guy, you're like, gosh, he's so tough. And then you kind of look back on it as you get older, and they say hindsight is 20/20. But then you say, okay, yeah, he just really cared. Because there's some coaches who don't put as much as Coach Arian or Coach Dooley into their guys and into their program. And, you know, it shows. But, you know, looking back, well, it's been almost 15 years, and it's just like, yeah, Coach Arian really, really poured a lot of himself into us.
Are you still close with your teammates now after over a decade being out?
He's, you know, I've caught up with a couple of them. I've run into a few of them in random places. But thanks to social media, I'm able to, you know, keep in contact. I talked to Hawkins, I'd say, about a month ago. I heard Travis Okunfe is coaching in Winston-Salem. I ran into Jonathan Moore. He's got a beautiful wife and daughter down in Tampa. I live in Atlanta now, and I ran into Belton Rivers, and he seems to be doing pretty well.
Oh, wow.
And Musa. I actually played with Musa in France. And, you know, Musa's doing well. I think he also got married and had a daughter. So guys seem to be doing pretty well. And Gabe. I can't forget about Gabe. I ran into Gabe in a EuroLeague game. And Gabe was always the same, you know, Mr. Consistent, Mr. Steady Eddie. And the final guy I ran into was Luke McKay at an AAU tournament in Vegas.
Well, so tell us about, are you still participating in basketball as far as, are you coaching now, or what are you
so,
doing?
So, I retired in 2015, and okay. I do a little bit of coaching. I do a little bit of individual training here in Atlanta. I try to stay a part of it. I still play. I can still get up and down a little bit. You know, obviously I'm not a 22-year-old spring chicken anymore, but I still play for fun and I still love the game. You know, I'll always love the game.
What are you doing in Atlanta?
I am a senior IT analyst for Coca-Cola Atlanta Syrup, which basically means I am the face of the IT department.
All right.
I am the IT department. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that you can give a few bucks to the Pirate Club. So Pirate Club, you're listening.
Right. Yeah. Give me a call. Give me another year or two, and I should be able to do that. Absolutely.
Excellent. Not to put you on the spot or anything, but
okay. That's all right.
There's a lot of my point. The reason I brought that up is not you, like individually, but I believe there's a lot of athletes, for example, that would give even if it was $100, you know, even whatever they could give. And we just need to do a better job. And that's including me, because if you're a member of the Pirate Club, you are the Pirate Club.
Exactly.
And so there's a lot of us that it's just, I guess, networking and connections. There's people, my family and friends that I can reach out to myself. So it's just amazing. There's so many great athletes over the years that I think we need to do a better job. And it's kind of like asking a girl out on a date. If you don't ask, she won't say yes. If you don't ask a person for money, they'll never give any money. So
exactly.
So then, as far as I know, Bubba, with we wanted to take a look at your career and Bubba, right, and talk about some games, maybe.
Yeah, actually, before I did that, I wanted to talk about his recruitment and his path to ECU. I know you're out of Largo, Florida, correct?
Right. So I signed. If I could go back that far, I signed Luke. I held out and actually committed to Davidson, but I didn't sign. I had a verbal commitment going to Davidson, and, you know, Coach Harrion convinced me to come check out ECU and, you know, combine that with, like, combine ECU, the campus, the atmosphere, going into Conference USA, getting a chance to play, you know, against Bob Huggins, Rick Pitino, you know, Marquette, like all these big names. I had to take advantage of it. So that's how I ended up at ECU. All those years ago, 2000, class of 2000, I was in high school. So,
yeah, you talk about coming and playing against the likes of Bobby Huggins and then Dwayne Wade and Tom Crean, you know, with Marquette. But prior to that, when you came, it was right before that transition occurred. So we were still in the CAA. So. So talk a little bit about that and that jump in competition from the CAA to, I mean, which wasn't a bad league, but it certainly wasn't CUSA either.
No. So the CAA was definitely competitive. I mean, I remember Virginia, VCU, and obviously VCU's had some success over the years. American University, Richmond, you know, George Mason had some great years. I actually played with a kid, Tony Skin, who was on that Final Four or that national championship, the team that made that run to the Final Four. You know, there's so many guys that were underrated that you never hear of that come out of the CAA. And you know, I ran into a handful of them overseas. And, you know, you don't realize how good some of those guys truly are. So, yeah, you know, you can look at Conference USA and say, wow, look at the competition. But, you know, some of those guys decided not to go to the big name schools so that they could play more minutes in a mid-major school. And, you know, those guys are just as talented, just as athletic, you know, and in some cases not maybe as big, but, you know, you can't really take away from a guy's heart. So those guys could play. That was not an easy conference.
And that's what you think. And those two upsets of Marquette, when we played, I think they're ranked ninth each time.
They were fifth one year, man. They were fifth. I remember that.
Okay. One was in February, and then the one was right there in December, just before New Year's. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk more specifically about that one, but talk a little bit about those two and your memories of knocking off Marquette and Dwayne Wade twice the Minjis.
First of all, let's just talk about the Minjis and the Minjis Maniacs. I mean, it was an incredible atmosphere. As a college athlete, you couldn't ask for a better atmosphere. You know, you got to give it up to the fans, the people in the city. I mean, the students, I mean, it was just incredible. And to come out there and come together as a team, you know, as a fledgling program in a major conference to knock off, you know, a future NBA Hall of Famer and his team, it was a great feeling. I mean, they had a couple other guys, Scott Novak and one other guy that played in the NBA on that team, but you know, Tom Crean is a Hall of Fame coach, and to come out there and to put, you know, Coach Herrion and the staff put together an incredible game plan, and, you know, we just kind of rose to the occasion. You know, that was a high that you'll always take with you. You know, I still talk to the guys whenever I'm around them or I see them or I hear from them. I say, you remember when we knocked off Marquette? And somebody asked me if I ever played against Dwayne Wade, and I said, yeah, we beat him twice.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That second year, they – When we knocked them off that December, then and went to the Final Four that year.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a testament to A, our fans, B, the potential that that was there on that team, on our team. So, you know, it was an exciting time. And, you know, I have memories and pictures that, you know, will last a lifetime.
And you mentioned Belton Rivers and how you crossed paths with him here in the last little bit. There's one play from that game when we knocked off Marquette that really stands out, and I think you know the play that I'm going to mention. We were going, I think it was in the first half, but we were going away from the football stadium toward that end of the court, and Belton Rivers was probably maybe about halfway between half court and the three-point line and threw an alley to Derek Wiley.
Yep.
And the infamous teabag dunk.
yeah, everybody went nuts, man. You know, absolutely. I mean, you can't forget those things, man. Derek Wiley was a heck of an athlete. You know, Belton Rivers brought a lot of swag to the game. And, you know, if you combine that with the energy that was in that building that night, I mean, I don't think Marquette thought they were going to pull one out of there. Not a chance.
I just remember when Belton made that pass, and the people I was sitting with said, there's no way he's going to get it. And then they found out otherwise.
Like I said, that energy, man, it boosts that adrenaline to another level. And, you know, you feel like you can touch the top of the backboard.
Another game that really stands out is that first year in CUSA is when we knocked off Rick Pitino and Louisville.
Absolutely. So I ran into three of those guys overseas in France while I was playing, and you know, I always walk up to them and say, gosh, man, remember that day y'all came in the Minjis and we stormed the floor on you guys? And I always try to, you know, give them a hard time, but that was electric. And I mean, that was, again, you can't ask for a better environment, a better feeling, and a better just experience, you know?
I mentioned that game against USF, a double overtime game. You pulled down 24 boards. One of the things, not specifically about your performance, but about that game in general, I think that was the game when Seth Greenberg, who's now an ESPN analyst, he got tossed after receiving his second technical, and the Minji's Maniacs, of course, were giving him a hard time, and who knows what they were chanting at him. And then Mrs. Greenberg got a little fired up and shot the Maniacs a double bird.
You know, emotions run high, man. Coaches get mad. Fans are – our fans did exactly what they were supposed to do. They got under somebody's skin. you hope nothing disrespectful was said. I don't know. I can't – I don't remember. I couldn't hear anything. It was so loud in there. But you got to love the passion, man. You know, some of those guys still reach out to me from time to time on Facebook, and I always try to thank them because – you know, they made my college basketball experience that much better. You know, you have passionate fans, and it's incredible.
Let's talk about that, Errol. I wanted to mention that as the atmosphere. Unfortunately, things had gotten to the point of where, not to be mean, but the very beginning of the last year with Lebo resigned after a handful of games, that very first game of the year, hardly anybody there. It was so quiet in there. It was very surreal, putting the word. I mean, I know that it's not like one of the well-known venues in the country or anything like that. I'm not trying to exaggerate. But when we're winning, when we have a product on the floor like you guys were under Coach Harry, then people show up. You have the marquee matchups already because the league we were in, the Conference USA, was great. Mm-hmm. Now with American, I mean – you've got a lot of great marquee teams and talent coming in every night, every home game. So it's no reason for us to have, like, it was like you could take your textbook there if you're a student. You could study for the next day exam. It was that quiet. And that's probably the lowest point, even during my time in the 90s in the CAA. Mm-hmm. That's the lowest point I've ever seen Minji's be that quiet.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, it happens. You know, it's not fun, but it happens. I think that part of it is, and I don't know the players from that time when it happened, but you need your players to go out and you know, kind of mingle and chat with the student body and try to get them excited as well. Like you said, you guys got the key matchups and you've got a good product, but I think – on the side, like, players need to, and I don't know if they were or were not, but, you know, that's just one way that just kind of engaging with them and hey, come out and you know, be receptive, especially in the days of social media, that you can reach out and say, hey, thanks for coming out. And that's kind of how you build your fan base, I would say, in this new day and age. But I can't imagine Minji. I don't remember a quiet Minji's. While I was playing, it was, you know, it was always packed and it was always fun. And win, lose, or draw, you know, they came out and supported. So, you know, let's hope that we don't have that again. You know, I've checked out some highlights and I've done some background on your players. And I'm hoping that, you know, you guys are on an upward trajectory. Coach Dooley and the staff, he's got a great staff, it looks like. And I've actually had conversations with Coach Potasnik, I think that's how he says it.
Potasnik, yeah.
Yeah, and he seems to be a great guy and very passionate about it. So I'm hoping, you know, that, again, it's an upward trajectory and you guys got a young core and, you know, between their performance on the floor and their engagement with the student body, there shouldn't be a problem bringing the fans back in.
And speaking of players, Errol, that's what someone that you've drawn a ton of comparisons to, and I don't know if you were aware of this before I brought it to your attention, but we have an unbelievable freshman in Jaden Gardner, and Jaden's someone who's from the Raleigh area. He's right there at the top of the league in scoring and rebounding as a true freshman, which is remarkable. Mm-hmm. And so he's someone, he's a little undersized, kind of like you were at 6'6", but he's really developing some versatility to his game. He's stepping out and knocking down 15 to 17 footers. And he's also got that quickness where you can put it on the floor and go around you. So Were you aware of Jaden Gardner, and talk a little bit about your game from that standpoint?
I was not, and until you brought him to my attention, but then I started going back and, checking his stats and doing some research, and he seems to be an extremely talented young man. I'm glad, and I love the fact that there's a young guy who has the energy and the intensity, and he plays as hard as he does. So I'm glad that he's, for lack of a better term, kicking ass and taking names. So I hope I can say that. And I hope it continues, I hope the expectations that the coaching staff puts on him and the expectations that he puts on himself are high. And from what I can tell, he should be able to achieve just about anything. I hope in the coming years I look up and he's shattered my rebound record in the game. I hope he, breaks the rebound record overall. I hope he becomes the first guy at ECU to put up 1,000 points and 1,000 rebounds in a career. So, I'm pulling for him.
Well, I hadn't even thought about it. That's if the guy stays healthy, he says he's not going to transfer. There's Pirate people in Pirate Nation, by the way, Errol, that are worried because of how great he is that he would leave the program.
An epidemic in college basketball right now.
Yeah, I noticed, man. That's killing it, man. It's become a mid-level Division I teams have basically become a training ground, almost like a double A for the major college teams, and it's hurting. I don't like it.
I mean, we got a kid right now that played here a couple of years ago that's, getting playing time to Syracuse.
I remember that. So I went and watched that. Yeah, somebody told me about the kid when you guys played down at USF one year. I went to the game, and then they're like, yeah, he's going to transfer to Syracuse. And I'm thinking, so that's what's going on now, that you can just, if you don't like a place or you have a little bit of a hard time, you can just up and transfer. So.
Or you have success, and so then you say, "Hey, I can go play for Syracuse now."
Right? Or exactly. You come in and you have a coaching staff develop you, and then you begin to grow, and it's like they pluck you right out. Yeah, I'm not a fan of that, but
you look at a guy like Ralph Sampson, one of the best ever to play at the University of Virginia, and one of the best ever college players. And what his son played for, three different, including us, I think it was three different schools, Bubba?
Jeez.
I think it was three different schools he ended up playing for in his college career.
Yeah, I think he transferred, was it Georgia Tech he left here for?
Jeez. That's too much, man. That's if a coach gets fired or something like that, I understand. But, you develop, and I think they've made it too easy. But, that's an NCAA problem as a whole. That's nothing.
A whole nother podcast, right?
Yeah, we could do a week's worth of podcast on that, man.
Now, Errol, you said you retired in 2015, and you said you played in France some with Moussa. So talk a little bit about where all you played overseas and some of the players you played with that our listeners may recognize and that sort of thing.
So, I started in 2005. Obviously, I graduated in 2004, but I had a knee injury that sidelined me until, January of the new year. And I started in Austria in a small town I didn't call it a town, man. It might have been a village of 400 or 500 people. And, you mentioned there was a time where Minji was a quiet. There was a day where we had a game the same day as the soccer team. I think there were 5 people in the stands. So I've been there. From there, I went to France in one of the major teams. It's called Limoges. It's a fairly big – at one point it was like the jewel of EuroLeague basketball, and then they had some financial struggles, and now they're back on top of the game. And then to Switzerland, where I played in the Euro Cup Challenge in a small city, and then back and bounce around to Dijon and another city called Clermont-Ferrand, Aix-les-Bains. So I played in about 6 different cities overall. I did 1 year in the EuroLeague, but unfortunately I had a major knee injury and was out that year, so I didn't play too much. But I did play against the big guy from George Mason. His first name is Ja. I can't think of his last name. I played against a couple kids from Louisville. I'm trying to give you a name. Elijah Muhammad was at Louisville that year. Moussa and I played together, and we played against Rashid Wright was a Old Dominion kid from 2000, between 2000 and 2004. Ricardo Marsh, I played against him. He was also a Old Dominion kid. And a couple guys from Cincinnati, guys that you never really heard of, Afield Williams. I played against Donald Little again. You know, just random guys, I think, just from time. There's so many, man. It's been so many years. But I ran into a lot of different guys, man. A lot of different guys.
Do you recall how many years Musa played over there?
Musa, I think Musa retired a year before me. So I'm going to say Musa did about 10, give or take, 10 solid years. Yeah, but Musa had a really successful career. He was on some of the top teams in France when I first got there. And then he and I had a couple battles toward the we had 1 year where we were on the same team. And believe it or not, they played Musa at the four and they put me at the five.
Really?
And Musa and I kind of – we looked at the coach and we were like, no, this is the other way around. And he's like, no, this is going to work. And, you know, eventually he ended up switching it, but we kind of laughed about it. And then we played against each other a few more times there toward the latter parts of our careers. But, you know, it was always a good time seeing Musa, always athletic, you know, always a great shot blocker. He developed a three-point shot, believe it or not. And, you know, same old nice guy, Musa. And then, I played against Gabe in a would have been a EuroLeague tournament in the year I kind of tore up my knee. And, you know, Gabe is Gabe, you know, no matter he was playing in Belgium that year. And no matter how fast or how hard you push, Gabe was not going to change his pace. So nothing changed with Gabe.
Did you enjoy living overseas?
I did, man. You know, it's. The thing about living overseas is you have to embrace the culture, right? You can't go over there and try to make the city that you're living in the a city from the United States. So if you go over there and you try to compare, you'll make yourself miserable. The best thing to do is just embrace it. I had a tutor to help me learn the language, and then the longer I was there, the more comfortable I became. And you know, I made friends on and off the court, and you know, I have lifetime friendships that you know that I really do cherish.
What was your favorite place to live in France or Switzerland? Or did you have one you like better than the other?
If I could just say pick a city that I could live in, I would live in Geneva. Geneva was incredible. Geneva was one of the most beautiful cities by far. Switzerland as a country is just absolutely gorgeous. Mountains, lakes. It's very, very international. You know, Switzerland has three different parts. You have a Swiss German, French, and you have an Italian part. So you can literally, you know, go on a 6-hour car ride and hear, you know, three different languages and be in three different cultures. But, you know, the food is great. I mean, you know, it was cold. I think that's the worst thing I could say is that it got kind of cold, but that's about it.
As far as the basketball, what was the, for the people, as far as internationally, the places you were, How receptive were they to basketball?
Well, okay, we all know soccer is king over there, right?
Right.
France has come a long way with basketball. I mean, it blossomed. Like I said, that first team I played for, Limoges, is now back to being a EuroLeague powerhouse. And you're talking, you know, 6,000-7,000 a night. Same with another team that I played for called Dijon. There were 6,000 or 7,000 a night.
Wow.
You know, I think the lowest place I ever played for, we got about 2,000. But even in that small venue outside of that team in Austria, you know, we'd get about 2,000 a night. So you'd probably somewhere between 75% full up to a capacity, depending on who we're playing. I mean, they love basketball. And the one advantage I would say about a country like France is, you know, they are able to play with pro teams, so there aren't any high school teams. There are obviously no universities, so they bring these kids and they bring them to a club and then they develop them that way. They also have a central federal, it's called Centre Fédéral, and it's in Paris where you take the cream of the crop and then they come to that area and they train a la Tony Parker, Nicholas Batum, Alexei Anjinka, the big guy, Rudy Gobert. Guys like that would have gone to that program and then been funneled through the major clubs in France.
That's really cool. I'm glad to hear, because there was a time there where it seemed like, you know, you had, of course, I love America, I mean, my country, but it's you get back to the 92 Dream Team, it wasn't even close, where the sport internationally was not a joke, but I mean, as far as like, it's the Americans and everybody else, you wanted to keep the game, you know. You don't want to see us win by 50.
Right. But it's funny you say that about the 92 Dream Team. So my first coach in France was actually on the French team that lost to the 92 Dream Team. So the president and the coach both played for that team. And, you know, my coach was a 6. I mean, he was their version of Magic Johnson, 6'9", played the 1 and the 2 and the 3 if necessary.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you know, really, I think they were intimidated by the Americans at first. I don't think it's that way anymore, but, you know, you can't underestimate these guys, you know, overseas. I mean, these guys can play, you know. Let's just call it what it is. They're not a pushover by any stretch of the imagination. So I think we caught them off guard. Obviously, Michael Jordan, you know, who else was on that team?
Oh, my God, Michael
Barkley,
Jordan.
I mean, Larry Bird,
Magic Johnson.
Yeah, you're talking
Michael,
about
Michael you're Jordan.
About, you're talking about literally our – you're literally talking
well,
about
you see what it was. What it was, yeah, early, it was a dream team.
Yeah, legitimately. I mean, you're literally talking about our best of all time.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean? You're not talking about, like, the guys today. You're talking about our best. Like, you named that team top to bottom, minus what, Chris? Was Christian Laettner on that team?
Or he was an awesome, yeah. He was like the sixth man.
Minus Christian Laettner, you're talking about, you may be talking about, you know, 12 or 13 of our top 50.
Yeah, guys of all time.
So, yeah, that's another level. But the
Larry
Johnson
on that team?
I don't think
we're
so.
No.
Are you sure? I'm almost positive, Larry.
Well, he might have been in one of the – well, they had – now that you say that, they had – with Laettner, there was two college players on that team. Laettner was one of them, maybe was Larry Johnson, but it was two – there was two college players on that team.
Yeah. I mean, just if you go back and look at it, I mean – so, yeah, we're talking about all-time greats versus, you know, the best that the other countries have to – I mean, you could get their all-time greats and nobody would have a chance. Hell, you could get our all-time greats now. Our greatest now and put them against that team, and I don't think there would be much of a contest.
Yeah, you look at. I'll tell you one. I'll coach that team. How about you, Errol?
Yeah,
just roll the ball out. Just do whatever you want to do.
Just stay out of their way. Just manage the minutes, man. Just manage the minutes.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, speaking of minutes, I appreciate you, man, for giving us a lot of time, and always huge fan of yours. And anybody that puts a jersey on as a Pirate, very excited. I'm a huge basketball fan, and I'm really praying hard for Dooley and the staff. They're working so hard with recruiting. It's exciting to see the. Speaking of dream teams, the dream team we have as that coaching staff at ECU is tremendous, and I'm looking forward to. Yeah, I'm looking forward to where we have instead of just individuals here and there, like yourself, where we can actually have teams that are there's five arrow beings on there as far as talent level.
I really appreciate that compliment, man. I'm glad that ECU is going to turn that corner and those guys are going to be successful. And, you know, I'd like to one day get in there and chat with those guys and maybe in the summertime bang a little bit. Not too much, but because I still got to go to work. It's just enough just to say, hey, I got up and down with the guys. So I appreciate you guys having me on, man. I really do.
All right. And I'm drinking a Coke in your honor right now. So
thank you.
As we speak. All right. Thank you so much. Have a great night, and hopefully we can get a chance to meet you. Come to Greenville, and love to meet you and shake your hand.
Absolutely, man. Thanks again. Y'all have a good evening.
All right, you too. Take care.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Well, guys, what a great interview there with Errol Bing, and I appreciate the time he spent with us, and it makes you feel good thinking about great job, Bubba, getting a hold of him, and another great get by.
Yeah, my favorite thing is hearing he's doing so well now in his professional career. Head IT guy for Coke of Atlanta, so that's good for him. And hey, to continue the conversation about the Dream Team guys, I got the roster here. It was Christian Laettner, David Robinson. Forgot about old David Robinson.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Wow.
Patrick Ewing, Larry Bird, Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan, Clyde Drexler,
Malone.
You cried, Jackson, Carl Malone, John Stockton, Chris Mullen, Charles Barkley, and Magic Johnson.
No wonder.
No Larry Johnson. There was no Larry Johnson.
Okay.
I did get that one wrong. But, yeah, that was a pretty good team.
Yeah, you think? Yeah, I think we could live with that, yeah. You know what's funny is ever since they came up with the concept, you know, the Dream Team, since that point, they've really never got – I mean, 96 was good but in Atlanta, but they never really got it was never as good as Barcelona, in my opinion, with 92.
Well, you're never going to – that was the first, and you're never going to have another first. And you had Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, and Magic Johnson on the same team. I mean, that's – yes, he's still recording. You had Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, and Magic Johnson, all three on the same team. I mean, that alone is impossible to beat.
We have a dream team right here. It's called the Sports Objective, man. I mean,
yeah,
we're all together. You never know who's going to be on our podcast. So
yeah, we had a run in from, was that Reese or was that your son, Bubba?
Reese.
That was Reese. And
she wanted to know
Daddy, where's my pink blankie?
Yeah. So. I thought she asked if you were still recording.
No.
Oh. But,
yeah, she wasn't that polite.
Danny,
I'll coach her up.
Maybe she has a podcast in her future. We'll see for sure. Guys, I'm just thrilled about tonight with the big event in Greenville at Dowdy Ficklin Stadium. It's going to be rocking. It's going to be huge. Before we go, I want to get your final thoughts on National Signing Day. It's one of my – I know it's not the same, but it's kind of like Christmas Day for me with college football.
It'd be interesting to see who gets those last three scholarships. Be nice if we can get a surprise tight end.
Yeah.
I know there's some talk. Isn't there a junior college tight end that we've offered?
We definitely need on the offensive side of the ball. I think if they got it, my scenario would be, guys, I don't know your thoughts because you guys follow it closer and certainly you're more in tune, I think, with football.
Tight end is what we need.
Tight end on offense. Two defense. I think it should be, if the perfect case scenario will be two defensive linemen and a tight end. What do you think? That's what my gut feeling is.
We need a tight end that can play right away. So if we don't get a junior college tight end, we need to have a grad transfer tight end, somebody transfer in. You've got to have a tight end to run this offense, a true tight end. If not, we're going to struggle this year on that side of the ball.
Yeah, we've got to have that. And it was, not to pick on him again, but it was missing. In my opinion, I love that position, and I think it's one of those positions that's very underrated, I think, when it comes to football, and there's so many ways you can use the tight end position, and I think that Montgomery never – in the Montgomery era, you just won't be able to say, that great tight end. I mean, what tight end was from the Montgomery era? I just don't – but anyway – moving forward, going ahead, Mike Houston, folks, again, I'm telling every single football player, I really am, about April 13th. After today, that'll be the next big thing. Let's get the south side, north side. I don't care which side, or that would be even great to have both sides, but I'll take one side on April 13th. Let's have everybody fill up the north or south side. It'll be fantastic. Former players galore. Let's make it a big family reunion. What do you think?
Yeah, it would be good, and we also need to have the current players there.
Oh, yeah, here we go. Yeah,
largest crowd I ever recall for an ECU spring game, and this happened on a couple of occasions, one of which was after all the excitement and success in 1991. So for that 1992 spring game, we had right around 10 or 10,500. So if we could get anywhere remotely close to that.
Man. That would be awesome.
If we got anywhere remotely close to that with where we've been the last 3 years, then that would be incredible.
That's not going to happen.
No.
But if we get 3,000 or 4,000 in there, that'll be nice.
Well, guys, there's a few thousand players alone. If you could reach out as many players as you can, you could get that many. But I know what you're saying. I agree with you wholeheartedly. That would be we'll take right now at this point, we'll take what we can get, but I would like to, the event like tonight is free. So is the spring game. So there's no reason.
Yeah, I normally don't go to the spring game just because I hate the spring game. I think it's a waste of time. You know what you're looking at, but
yeah.
I'll probably actually go to the spring game this year just because of, being the first time to see any kind of Mike Houston coach football in person. And, you know, so there'll probably be some people like me that normally don't go to the spring game that love football.
I'm one of them.
That'll be there this year. Yeah, there's two of us right there.
I don't care. I mean, to me personally, Stephen Igo, for example, does such a great job of covering the event that if we were not doing a podcast, I wouldn't be going because I would just read – I would read Hoist the Colors. I would ask friends that went or Hoist the Colors and watch it on local television, the highlights for sure about what happened. And other than that, and read the Daily Reflector. So Ronnie Woodward, give a shout out to him. Other than that, I wouldn't be there. But we actually are going to be there. So in a media capacity as well. So. We're working out the details. I will tell folks.
That's right. Yeah, I was saying I was going to be there. I forgot we're doing a podcast.
Well, you could call in, Kyle, if you just say I'm not going to be there. I'll be there.
I'm good messing. Little in the creek, don't rise.
I'm messing. Before, guys, we want to remind folks again, too, by the way, to email us. You can actually email the show. It's thesportsobj@gmail.com. And Bubba, a lot of people of the social media, thank you for Bubba's doing an excellent job on social media. That slam dunk that Steph LeDay had, that was great. And on Twitter the other day, I want to give you a shout on that. And how can people find us on social media?
Yeah, on Twitter, it's @TheSportsOBJ. On Instagram, @TheSportsObjective. And then like and follow us on Facebook, and just by searching The Sports Objective. And then also our YouTube channel, just search The Sports Objective.
What about a MySpace?
I'll have to look that up, but I did create one for Kyle. And
do we have a Twitch account?
Twitch?
Twitch account?
No Twitch account. You can make that if you'd like.
Okay, I'll do a Twitch account. All right. What about Friendster? Anything on Friendster?
No, you can, whatever you want to do, you can do it, my friend. We're on Tumblr, we're on Instagram, we're on
maybe I'll create
Snap.
A specific Tinder account, see how that goes.
Oh my goodness, wow. Yeah, that'll go over very well. Guys, I've had a great time. We've got to get out to the event. Go out there at 4:30 this afternoon. 5 o'clock will be the big event for National Signing Day. And, of course, we're going to have a lot of great interviews. We'll have that out in the next couple of days. We'll put out so as well, and we'll have a great podcast for that. Plus, we're also going to have a National Signing Day after party, if you will, with different guests on to talk about the different signees. We'll be doing that and much more. Until next time, Kyle from LaGrange Barber, Bubba Rosenbaum, you've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.